Blog Talk Radio.
Ray and Tay today. Yes, Sports Radio's on. Talking sports with friends, and you know we got it on. From the NFL to the NBA, MLB and college hoops do it all day. College football, we know who's number one. Understand, on the phones, you know we get it done. So call in 718-664-9098 and we'll give you more. Talking sports, yes we do. Talking sports.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Are you a free agent? So we'll talk about it. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and yes, we are hyped up, giving you the best in everything. NFL, college hoops, NBA. So give us a call, 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out rayandtaytoday.com. Great poll questions, great sports interviews, a lot of information. Listen to all of our back shows there. And also subscribe to our show on iTunes. Hear all the old podcasts, anything you want, great interviews. We got it all. Ray, we got five tags in the NFL. We have a new salary cap. We have one transitional tag. But basically, one guy is going to hit the free agent market potentially from the Detroit Lions. And I ask you, is Ndamukong Suh from the Detroit Lions the biggest free agent since the late, great Reggie White?
So I can't remember a defensive free agent that's going to have this much of an appeal and potentially this much of an impact on NFL rosters.
A guy in his prime.
Yeah, a guy in his prime. The problem, though, is with this whole franchise system, he would have cost Detroit $26 million against the cap. So I don't blame Detroit for not franchising this guy.
Oh,
they need to find a way to sign him to a deal. But franchising him and putting $26 million in a position that's not quarterback, I mean, that's hard. That's hard to do. So it will be very interesting to see where Ndamukong Suh ends up, you know, what kind of numbers he gets. I mean, you think about what Albert Haynesworth got 4 or 5 years ago. He's going to get more than that. He's going to be getting, you know, quarterback money. But I just think the way the system's rigged, Detroit had to let him go.
Yeah, no, definitely, Ray. Agree 100%. Let's break it down. So the transitional tag went to the tight end Charles Clay for the Dolphins, which probably just made some more money for Jordan Cameron from the Browns, and then your boy Julius Thomas for the Denver Broncos, the two top tight ends out there. And then the five guys, the two receivers, Demaryius Bebe Thomas from the Broncos, Dez Bryant from the Cowboys, they get their 13.4. Stephen Gutkowski, the field goal kicker for the Patriots, which they did not do McCourty, so maybe they'll try to get a deal with him. They can negotiate, you know, until the ninth. And then you've got Justin Houston, the pass rusher, the sack leader from the Chiefs, who they said is very upset by this tag, so that could get ugly. You also have JPP, Pierre Paul, from the New York Giants, their pass rusher. So, I don't know. I mean, to me, free agency is definitely coming fast. They, starting on Thursday, can start to negotiate. Everything is official March 10th, and March 9th, I guess, is the last day they have to reach deals with their you know, old teams like a Sue, Randall Cobb, all these guys. When you start to think about it, and, you know, the salary cap went up to 143.28 million dollars. The Jaguars and the Raiders are the two top teams with money free, 69 and like 58 million. Do you see somebody giving ridiculous, you know, 6 years, over 100 million JJ Watt money to Sue, someone like the Jaguars or Raiders that really want to change their team?
You know, if he didn't have the off the field, I shouldn't say off the field, not much going on off the field. If he didn't have all those suspensions, then maybe. But I don't know that he can get J.J. Watt money. He's going to have to take a step below J.J. Watt. You think so?
He does. Because think about it this. Remember, J.J. wasn't, you know, a free agent, and he still had a year or two left on his deal. So he was just competing with himself and his team. This guy's a free agent where a lot of teams have cap space. You're talking about Raiders. You're talking about the Tampa Bay again, the Giants, the Jets, bunch of teams, Jaguars, the Redskins. Don't think that somebody doesn't want – Sue changes your defense because you can't run against him. So I think it'd be a huge
threat. I don't say people don't want Sue. I'm just debating the money. Of course people are going to want Sue. Like you said, he's the closest thing to Reggie White. Reggie White was maybe more of a pure pass rusher. But this guy impacts the game, impacts the defense. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. He's unbelievable. My question, though, is are you going to pay are you going to max out on Ndamukong Suh?
Somebody will. It only takes one.
That's true.
Tell that to his agent. Well, this is going
to
be fascinating because – let's talk about a young team like the Raiders, right? They've got the fourth pick. Maybe you draft Kevin White. You can go in there and basically get a good offensive lineman, pick up a running back, maybe another receiver and a Sue, and be like, we're done, and now we have almost a playoff team. And don't think that Knighting, that he might not go with Jack Del Rio over there at the Raiders. So there's a lot of stuff brewing, and a lot of teams that are after, you know, guys like Randall Cobb, Julius Thomas, your boy Macklin. You think Macklin's going to get a big deal? I think he's gone. Philly's going to lose him, I bet.
So he's a two-time knee injury guy. And, you know, even in Missouri, he was great. But I don't think he's a star. I think he is your very good number two receiver. So I don't know that I pay Jeremy Macklin crazy, crazy number one receiver money.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to pay the money that Mike Wallace got. And look, the Dolphins, listen, your boy Tay did his first mock draft. I'm only going to do two, but I'm releasing, NFL mock draft 1.0 prior to free agency. And at 14, I have the Dolphins, after they released Hartline and Gibson, I got the Dolphins taking Jalen Strong, the fourth wide receiver in the draft, and they're keeping Clay. You got to believe that, you know, some of these teams could say, you know what? A Macklin could be, hey, maybe not your one, but maybe your two, and you give him good, solid money. They're trying to trade Wallace. I mean, this is going to be fascinating. And don't sleep on the fact that DeMarco Murray wants to stay a Cowboy, but what if somebody wows him out there in the market of free agency? All the backs were horrible last year. Knowshon Moreno was probably the best of them, but then got injured. None of the other backs did anything. So Reggie Bush is out there. You got good backs in the draft, at least 5 to 6 good ones, maybe 2 first-round picks. There's going to be some guys that I think, you know, like for Miami, Tannehill, he's showing promise, but now you got to give him some weapons, right?
Yeah, especially because Mike Wallace is not what they thought he would be. And
Torrey Smith
out
there?
Essentially a bunch of number two and number three receivers in Miami. So they need a little oomph, especially because if there's anything we learned from the Peyton Manning experiment, it is if you think this is your franchise quarterback, you know, with the exception of Tom Brady, who did more with less, you got to give the quarterback the receivers. You know, if you don't, then you never really know if he's your guy, and you never really gave him a chance to succeed. So, yes, Miami definitely has to get better at the wide receiver position.
No, you're definitely right. And when you think about teams like the Jets who've got decent money, you know, if they're going to say maybe we go ahead and draft Mariota if he drops to us, you got to believe that they, you know, they've already released Chris Johnson. So maybe they could put a Reggie Bush with a Chris Ivory and, you know, sign a Macklin to put with Decker. You know, I mean, so there's going to be opportunities, I believe, for, you know, some of these guys out there, you know, to really improve. And you look at the young quarterbacks for the Jaguars and Raiders, Bortles and Carr why not get them a Julius Thomas, right? A young rookie quarterback best friend, or, you know? So, look, we'll be on it, and we'll be fascinated to see how it goes down. But I tweeted that out, and I think Sue is the definitely the biggest defensive, and obviously Manning's older. So, to me, he's the biggest free agent, you know, possibly ever in terms of talent-wise. And as a defensive, like guys like this don't become available. They just don't. You know, so somebody's going to break the bank and change their roster.
Well, you said it, and I think people will – there'll be a little bit of a discount for him, but he's definitely – if his game is right and his head is right and he doesn't get suspended, he changes your defense. I mean, this guy plugs the middle and rushes the pass. I mean, he is your combo defensive tackle that really stabilizes your front line, and it lets people – you know what it does? He lets people play their positions. He frees people up to just do what you do. You know,
linebackers,
so if you've got
love
guys, yeah, linebackers love them. Defensive linemen love them. Of course, the cornerbacks love them. Defensive coordinators love them. Just stay on the field, Ndamukong. Stay on the field, player.
So, but let me ask you though. Obviously, it's going to be hard for Detroit to probably get a deal with him. He's this close to free agency. He's probably going to test it. I don't think they're going to have the money to really match anything. Where do they go from here? Because losing, getting rid of a Bush and Sue, yeah, they've got Fairley and some other guys. But how do you replace him? Like, that's the question that I have for, like, a Lions team that you feel like they were kind of knocking on the door this year. They've kind of figured it out, you know?
I am very upset today if I'm a Lions fan. I mean, I understand I just made the rational argument that you can't pay this guy $25, $26 million or he can't count that much against your cap. But if you're a Lions fan, you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, we just came off a season where Megatron got hurt and Stafford wasn't as good as he was in the two previous seasons. And Golden Tate maybe stepped up, so that was the pleasant surprise. Nick Fairley and some of the defensive line got better. But you're basically taking our best defensive player and our second best offensive player in Reggie Bush, and now they're off the team. So you can't tell me I'm better off. I mean, Golden Tate's a good, solid addition, but I don't know. Reggie Bush is dynamic, you know, and Ndamukong Suh is, we just talked about his accolades. So I'm not really happy as a Detroit Lions fan right now. I know we've got some Detroit Lions fans that call into the show, and we'll be happy to hear from you and talk to you. So
yeah,
they must
Nick.
Have some free agency up yeah. their sleeve, maybe a long-term draft plan. But, you know, there's a lot of money they save, I guess, between Bush and Sue. But they got to put it to good use because right now you're much worse off today than you were yesterday as a Lions fan.
Yeah. So as it all plays out, I mean, obviously, you know, Monday, you know, and Friday we'll give you all the updates. I'll be interested to see Cleveland with their two first-round picks and, you know, having Josh McCown as their starting quarterback, how they build around him, you know what I mean, if they, you know, get themselves and maybe even re-sign their tight end and try to get some receivers, not knowing what's going on with Gordon. So Ray and Tay will be on NFL free agency. And you talked about Detroit and just, you know, this rough winter and the cold weather. Well, March is here, and so is the madness. Ray, we've got the top 25. And for me, besides Kentucky being number one, my big smile has to go to number 10 in the nation. Can I get a yo, Terps? The Maryland Terrapins are in the top 10, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, Lord, do we have to hear this all week?
Oh, baby, you got to love it.
All month?
But I got to say a couple things, right? I kind of called that BYU over Gonzaga thing, and I definitely said the Terps would take down Wisconsin, so I'm feeling pretty good right now. You tell me, can anybody stop the Kentucky Wildcats? And are the Arizona Wildcats, after their big win in Utah, are they looking like they might climb into the top four eventually? They're number five to get the one seed. What are you thinking?
Well, it's always possible, because I'll go with the latter first, it's always possible that somebody can sneak in there because Duke and Virginia are both ranked in the top, right? They're 2 and 3. So,
with
Gonzaga losing, you got to figure, even if the ACC plays out to form, one of them is going to lose in the ACC Finals. Now, it's hard to believe that, especially if Duke is the loser, because Virginia only has one loss. So if Virginia's the loser and Duke wins, maybe both of them get one seed. But if Virginia were to beat Duke, then you could make the case for Arizona or even a Wisconsin sneaking in there and getting that fourth number one, assuming, you know, Villanova can run the Big East. So possible. It'll be very interesting. It was interesting to see Gonzaga drop from 2 to 7. You know, maybe they sneak back in because they all along were considered a lock for a number one seed, but that loss to BYU has really hurt them.
Let me ask you this. Is it fair to say, though? Let me ask you this. Is it fair to say if let's say Duke loses, and then you've got the two of the number one seeds are Kentucky and UVA, right? And let's say, you know, you're going to debate Villanova, but could Arizona, Pac-12, run the table, strong conference, and then Wisconsin, Big Ten, run the table? Could you see those two being the other two number one seeds and jumping Villanova, Villanova being that fifth team numbered, you know, the first number two? Because you could say Arizona and Wisconsin overall probably have higher RPIs, tougher conferences, you know, over Villanova. Villanova hasn't really beat any great, great teams comparatively, you know what I mean?
Let's put it this way. Villanova is going to be on that S-curve, they're going to be 4 or 5. So it almost depends on how the rest of the field plays out. So Villanova has not played a great schedule, but they're 27-2. So if these guys, if one of them falters, the Big Ten or the Pac-12 champion falters, and assuming that Virginia beats Duke, Villanova probably gets that number one seed. If any of those other teams have a strong showing and win their tournament, then you could see Villanova on the 5 line. They could maybe drop to 6 if everybody wins out, right? If Arizona wins out, if Wisconsin wins out and looks good, and then if Duke were to beat Virginia in a close ACC final, then maybe Villanova drops to 6. But probably Villanova's 4 or 5, just depending on the eye test, how the other teams look.
Did you like Wichita State beating and taking care of Northern Iowa and basically saying, hey, even without Clay Anthony Early, we're, you know, Gary Marshall, great coach and doing a great job another year?
Yeah, that was good for them. I like that. You know, I always like to see upsets and I always like to see, you know, Cinderellas, but I'd like to see sustained excellence. You know what I mean? 1 year flash in the pan, I don't really, you know, it's fun. It's fun, but I love when you build a program. So I love to see Gonzagas of the world, the quote-unquote mid-majors, Wichita States of the world. I hope that Northern Iowa can sustain some momentum. I mean, they were good 2-3 years ago. So I always like to see those teams do well. Shaka Smart and VCU, you know what I mean? Those type of teams, I always, Murray State, you know, I would love to see them on a sustained run. But let's get back to Kentucky for a sec. You talked about, you know, and we asked this question to the Twitter world, is Kentucky the 1990 UNLV team that goes undefeated in the regular season, loses to Duke in the semis? Are they the 1976 Indiana team, the last undefeated team, or are they something earlier that they either lose before and then win the tournament or go undefeated and maybe even lose earlier in the tournament? I tell you what, I see this team and I'm
40-0, Ray. 40.
You think so? It's a done deal. It's a wrap.
unless it's, we say this off air, I see where, and I give Jay Williams credit first for saying it from ESPN, ex-Dookie, the Arizona Wildcats, they could beat the Kentucky Wildcats. I don't know if anybody else has the manpower or the guard leadership than the size. And, you know, Stanley Johnson's a man. He's got a little LJ in him, you know what I mean? So That'd be fascinating to see, because watching that Arizona game in Utah, Utah hasn't lost at home in a while. And, you know, their streak wasn't like Gonzaga's. But, you know, Arizona goes to Utah and they get a big win. And by the way, Arizona also beat Gonzaga this year. So that's one game that I think Kentucky could have a rough time, and maybe Wisconsin or Duke in a perfect situation, maybe in a Final Four. But Kentucky could be 40-0. Ouch.
I wonder what that – let me look that up. I wonder what that what that Indiana team was, that 1976 Indiana team with Kent Benson and those guys. I'm pretty sure they didn't win 40 games.
Well, no. There's much less games. I think they were 32 or 33-0. They didn't have all the conference tournament games. Or back then, they didn't have the conference tournament, remember? So you're going to get three wins in a conference tournament, quarters, semis, and finals. So
right.
That changes everything. And then there's more games.
You're saying 40-0. You're saying book it.
I'll tell you Selection Sunday, 2 weeks from yesterday.
What? It's going to determine where they meet Arizona, basically? 32-0. That's a good call. You called it 32-0, the 1976 Indiana Hoosiers men's basketball team.
Kent Benson and Isaiah Thomas.
No, Isaiah Thomas wasn't on that team. Isaiah Thomas was on the 81 team.
Oh, okay. Wait, 76 was who was on that team, 76 team?
Here, I'll pull up the roster.
Okay, that was before Isaiah.
So the guys that you would know, Quinn Buckner.
Yeah, oh, sorry,
Scott
Quinn.
May.
Yeah, Scott May.
Right?
Sean May.
Those are pretty much the stars of that team. Kent Benson, of course.
Yes. Okay, so I was right about Benson. Okay, so Benson, May, and Buckner. Buckner played for the Celtics and the Bucks. Very solid guard, kind of like a backup point, little combo.
And these are the guys that have made the NBA. So Scott May, Quinn Buckner, Bob Wilkerson, Tom Abernathy, Kent Benson, Wayne Radford, and Bob Bender. So they had six guys make it to the pros. Seven.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. Look, it's going to be great watching. Look, as the season winds down this week, we got Duke at North Carolina. You know, you got a lot of solid matchups. I'll be interested to see, because I think Kansas is fading fast at number 9. I think my Terps have an outside shot of climbing up to getting a 2 seed. Definitely Maryland should be a 3 seed if they keep this up. I think they'll finish out the week strong with Rutgers and Nebraska. But Kansas, Ray, I don't think they're going to get through this week. They might lose against West Virginia tomorrow, and we'll see what happens at Oklahoma in Norman, right? Never an easy matchup.
They could lose twice, you're saying.
At least once. At least, I don't know. Mentally, they seem like they're shook. Kansas State kind of shook them. The fans ran on the court and shook them up. I don't know what's going on with Kansas. They're not looking.
Yeah, this is a weird team that Bill Self has. I mean, I feel like they have no identity, you know? They've got talent because they always do. They're led by Perry Ellis, who is if nothing else, just a steady, not a dynamic player. You know, he's not the typical dynamic Kansas forward athlete.
Right.
He's just a good, solid senior, you know, scoring 15 and 7 rebounds a game. And then after that, it's a bunch of – I mean, they have trouble scoring. I mean, they got Mason and Seldon and Kelly Oubre, yeah. But they don't really have that star, that dynamic Paul Pierce type, even Nick Collison, Rafe LaFrance. You know, they don't have anybody that can carry a team and really push them. I can't see Kansas getting – even if they get a top 10 seed, I can't see them getting – even to the Sweet 16. I mean, this is a really young, in some ways, and just not a dynamic Kansas team. And Bill Self is probably like, we need to get some more studs in here. You know, some more Andrew Wiggins is up in here.
Hey, you want to? So two things, right? And I got to mention it because, you know, we lost Anthony Mason, And Anthony Mason Jr., who played for St. John's, I'm connecting it just because I think St. John's might pull the upset against Villanova, which would definitely put them in a tournament, but I think they're already there. But I did not realize that Antoine Mason, he plays for Auburn, his son. So,
yes.
Yeah.
He transferred. He led the nation in scoring. And
at
he transferred to
Auburn.
Yeah,
he was at a small school, yeah. So that's a great story. You know, shout out to Mace. Great Nick. You know, just it seems like, Ray, we've lost a lot of not just basketball players, a lot of athletes in the last, you know, just 2 to 3 weeks, last month or so. It's obviously Kersey.
All these forwards, right? And they're all between – we looked it up and we posted it on Facebook – on Twitter, between 48 and 52. So Roy Tarpley was right in the middle. He was 50. Jerome Kersey was 52. And Anthony Mason was 48. So all these guys playing in the 90s, really, late 80s for Jerome Kersey, early 90s for the rest of these guys, too young. You know, 50 is too young. By the way, I looked at – there was a site that listed all the NBA players that have passed. And it's amazing. First of all, guys that we never really talk about, Caldwell Jones, our boy from Philly passed.
Yeah.
And he was like 63 or something like that. So a lot of these athletes are passing too young, these basketball players.
Yeah.
It's not natural to pass it when you're 50.
Yeah.
Heck,
well,
we're approaching that.
Yeah. Hey. Quiet. We gotta hit the Jordan return first. But let's talk NBA. Let's take a quick break. We got a lot to talk about because there's some cats talking smack like there's a new king in Houston. NBA talk right back.
Talking NBA hoops, hoop it up, round ball style. And did you see last night there was a new sheriff in town, and his name was not Reggie Hammond, but his name was James Harden. Did you see that whole exchange?
Can I tell you a couple things about it? One, he should be suspended for the kick to the man area. That's never okay.
Never.
Somebody said, yeah, he should definitely get 2 games for the family jewels. I think that. But what I took from that game, and I don't want to hear these stupid people, I guess the trolls on Twitter or the blogs, talking about LeBron failing. That's not even a story. Yes, he shot poorly in the whole game, free throw line, and just in the game. Did too much, forgot about Kevin Love, had no Kyrie. But two things I loved. One thing I loved, one thing I hated. I hated Cleveland's offense and LeBron just doing the old Cleveland LeBron, isolating and trying to either go pick and roll or whatever. And you feel like the last 5 minutes, he only did the one pass to JR who shot it and then one inside play to Kevin Love. To me, they would have won that game if they actually played a little bit of team basketball. So that's a knock on LeBron.
Not
for
only
me.
That, but just to add to that point real quick, on a day where he was playing poorly, right? It's not as if this guy was scoring 50 and you just said, all right, give it to LeBron, let him go do his thing and everything will work out. This is a day where he wasn't playing well. So this is a day to run more offense, to be integrated, to
I don't mind when he penetrates, though, right? I don't like it when he settles for those fadeaway three-point or then sometimes he's taking a fadeaway 20-footer. It was weird. I'm like, LeBron, what are you doing? And, I mean, yeah, he didn't shoot well. I think he played well, you know, had a couple of blocks. He filled up the stat category, him and Harden. It was an MVP battle, and they were going at each other. And let me tell you, Trevor Ariza, they showed – Daryl Morey gets credit because they showed – why they wanted Ariza and not Chandler Parsons, because Ariza plays defense like I'm going to mug you on the three train, okay? That was some serious defense.
Man, they don't have no three trains in Arizona. What you know about the three train? Come on.
Got to take you back, baby. Come on. Yo, so that, you know, and watch that last stop. So, but you definitely – you saw, and I like Patrick Beverly, Harden, nobody backed down, nobody was kissing the ring, and you know me, I am the biggest critic of the Houston Rockets, but slowly but surely, without Dwight Howard, and I think he can only make them better, they're impressing me, Ray, because they can win it different ways. Harden was, what, 15 for 18 from the free throw line. You've got the ton of three-pointers. You've got Josh Smith, Terrence Jones, Beverly, Monta Yunus. These guys are shooting up threes left and right, and they shoot a decent enough percentage that, hey, they're always going to be in a game. And Harden is the best one-on-one scoring option potentially in the league. And right now, and I said it before, he is my MVP. Sorry, LeBron.
I tell you what, James Harden is hard to guard because this guy, shout out to Edgar Burgos,
yeah,
he is 6'6", 6'7", legitimately. He's a 90% free throw shooter down the stretch. He can assist. So you put a small guy on him, he can pass over you. You put even LeBron over him, he can make his moves on you. You know he's left-handed, so that gets me excited. And
well, did you see that about the MVPs? I thought about you. Only four left-handed MVPs, and he'd be the fifth?
I like that.
Right.
I like that. But I'm saying, for real, he is a serious, serious force and a matchup problem down the stretch between his size, his strength, and his ability to shoot free throws. So that's the one thing about LeBron, and granted, he had a bad game. LeBron's a 73% free throw shooter. That's a big difference between 73 and, you know, 85, especially when you're coming down the stretch. James Harden wants to get fouled. You know, you could argue
LeBron
James
doing it.
Doesn't want to get fouled.
Him and Russell Westbrook. Now, look, you look at those two going at it, right? And then on Friday we had – you know, LeBron basically smack up the Splash Brothers. So in that battle of these MVPs, LeBron was like, I'll take out Steph. And then Harden was like, yeah, but I'll take out you. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes down. I bet Steph will wind up getting it just because it's like a popularity competition sometimes, I think. And everybody loves Steph Curry. I don't think people love James Harden. And I don't think it's fair. I don't know if it's the beard and he's a little ornery and he just seems like an awkward guy. You know, he went to ASU, but he's never been
respected. They retired his number a few weeks ago. Did you see that?
Yeah, no. They've been giving him some love out here, but he's not, like, embraced. It's interesting. He's not embraced the way that he should be as, you know, one of the great greats in ASU history or whatever. It'll be fascinating to see. And look, with all these injuries, right, you don't know how things are going to wind up playing out because, look, Kyle Lowry's hurt. Jimmy Butler's out for 3 weeks. Russell Westbrook.
3-6. It might be all the way into the playoffs with Jimmy Butler.
The Bulls are fading, and Toronto is going to fade. Cleveland's going to get up to the 2 spot. Now, this is the question. Does Paul George come back and play? Because right now, hello, world, the Indiana Pacers are in the playoffs. Playoffs? Okay, can we give this guy some votes for Coach of the Year? Frank Vogel,
but let's call a spade. They're in the playoffs with a 25-34 record, right?
No, I'm sorry. But this is a legit question, right? Should Paul George, who's been at practice, should he come back and play? I think Miami is going to fade with their injuries. Indiana might stay, and then either Charlotte or Brooklyn is going to jump in. I would probably say Brooklyn.
Why not? Look, it's all about medical clearance. But if you get medical clearance, why not? You know, like
Pacers,
we say, the East.
Could they beat a Toronto in a 2-7 or beat Atlanta in a 1-8, the Pacers?
Yes. I think any team can beat Toronto and Atlanta. As good as they are, are not really the formula to win playoff basketball games. You know what I mean? So I don't think they will. I don't think they will, right? But it's not crazy. It's not like those teams where you're like Kentucky. You know, you're like, they're just going to blow through the SEC. You think that, you know, some of those old teams like the Lakers or the San Antonio Spurs, you say, oh, they can't win. They can't lose early rounds. They're going to go all the way at least to the Western Conference Finals. You could see Atlanta or Toronto, one of those teams, losing in the first or second round. Absolutely.
The Eastern Conference playoffs, from the seventh seed down to 9, 10, 11, 12, Detroit, is only 3.5 games. So if you want to be honest, Detroit, Boston, Charlotte, Brooklyn, they're still alive. Miami and Indiana, I mean, anybody, you know, Milwaukee's solid. They're going to probably stay in there at their spot. But you got to believe that, you know, anybody can scramble in the East and make the playoffs. And then with these injuries with OKC, no Westbrook for a bit, it's, you know, probably not going to be as bad as people thought. But you like, you know, look, them and the Pelicans still winning without Davis and without Westbrook and Durant. Big win yesterday over the Lakers. Augustine and Kanter and these guys step up. So you got to believe OKC is pretty solid. It's disappointing for the Phoenix Suns that they're not getting it together fast enough to take advantage of these injuries. Two games behind OKC and half a game behind the Pelicans. I mean, can OKC hold on? Is that what we're really going to see here, even with the injuries?
I got to think that if you can roll out Durant and Westbrook in most of your games that are left, and there are, what, they play 60 games? So they have 22 games left. You know, maybe next
they
two or three games are
like
kind of
four
iffy.
Six games, yeah.
Next two or three games, four games maybe are iffy, but you got to think New Orleans' best player is hurt. They may not catch San Antonio, but I got to think they're a hold off New Orleans and Phoenix. So Oklahoma City, it's hard to bet against them. Now, you know me, deep down, I want them to miss the playoffs, make the lottery, and set that team up, you know, a la San Antonio of the late 90s.
Durant and Westbrook would not leave. They would stay. If they wind up adding like an Okafor with a Kanter and that whole team, I mean, they would be, yeah, that would be insane. I mean, really, they could add anybody to that roster. Don't even talk about stuff like that. You need to just focus on our Knicks getting the number one pick and getting Okafor. You know, hey, give the Knicks credit. They haven't played.
Well, look,
bad.
This kid. A lot of people are saying that this kid, Karl Anthony Towns from Kentucky, might be more dynamic than Okafor.
You know what?
Especially on the offensive end, he's got more tools.
He can hit the 12 to 15 footer pretty consistently. Got some boogie moves. I like Okafor a little bit more aggressive in the post. We'll see. You know, the coin toss. How that you know, all plays out, who wants who. The Sixers released your boy JaVale McGee today. They did a buyout with him. But this is the question, man. When we talked about some of these teams and these franchises, they seem like they're going nowhere. Well, it screams out to you the Denver Nuggets, because they had broke the huddle the other night, and you're talking about Lawson, Fareed, and some of these, you know, decent players, and they were like basically like 1, 2, 3, 6 weeks. So at 20-39, they're looking forward to the season ending, and it seems like they really just hate and cannot stand Coach Brian Shaw. Is Brian Shaw going to be done after two seasons in Denver? I don't think he survives this, Ray.
You know, you had Denver a few weeks ago as one of your bigger disappointments, and I sort of took the defense and said, they really don't have a roster that allows them to be that competitive in the West. But to be as bad as they are, and to, I mean, they have 20 wins, right? And they're 20-39. And now if you start hearing things about players don't like playing for the coach, so you're losing and they don't like playing for the coach, yeah, you've got to shake it up. And it's easier to shake that old adage, it's easier to shake up the coach than it is a 13, 14, 15-man roster. So chances are Brian Shaw probably doesn't survive. He doesn't have enough equity built up as an NBA head coach or in Denver. So it'll be really tough to see him survive this.
It's a shame. It's a shame because, you know, he really wanted the L.A. job, never got it. And then, you know, it seems like he kind of got a job that I don't know you know, what's happening. And their GM went to Toronto, and he's done a great job. Well, you know, I don't know what's happened since, you know, the new GM has taken over. The moves are not, you know, maybe they gave J.J. Hickson too much money. Like, I don't know why. He's not a winning player, so I don't know why they went after him. They just haven't really – they're not doing good. They're really not doing good. It's going to be one of those situations, right? All right, let me ask you this about the Grizzlies. So, I mean, well, actually, forget the Grizzlies, the Clippers. DeAndre Jordan, two biggest rebounding, you know, games, 27 and 26 rebounds. This weekend they went ahead, they beat the Bulls, and they beat the Grizzlies. You know, I've been rough on them, but I got to say this. Your boy CP3 and DeAndre Jordan have played exceptionally well without Blake Griffin. And CP3, I think, has been making a statement. And I just wonder and hope that he can keep it up and the team could keep it up for the playoffs. And it kind of, to me, depends on DeAndre Jordan. He's sort of that third piece that needs to make some free throws and be dominant. You know what I mean? For them to go to the next level, forget about their bench and yada, 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 whatever. You know, in the playoffs, you just need a couple of guys, Hawes, Crawford, and whoever else, and they'll run with their 8-9 rotation and go. Do the Clippers, is this sort of like, I feel like the window's closing. Blake Griffin being out, what I want to say is, will this help them potentially in the playoffs? Could it be a good thing?
Sort of that blessing in disguise? It could be. Because at the end of the day, I think people tended to look at Blake Griffin, stand around and look at him and just say, oh, that's Blake Griffin. Look at the things he can do. So now DeAndre Jordan is just an absolute monster on the boards. He's still got his offensive deficiencies. He still can't shoot free throws. But this guy has had 8 straight games of 15 rebounds or more. And last game, what did he have, 26 rebounds, something crazy like that?
Yeah. And he's scoring points, too. He's getting double-doubles. He's doing it.
In some ways, the West is so tight that, yeah, maybe if they had Blake Griffin, they, instead of being a fifth seed, maybe, well, right now they're tied or in the win column, but a couple back in the loss column, Portland. So 4, 5, 6 look to be real close. Maybe they can catch Houston at 3, maybe if they had a Blake Griffin. But in some ways, they have to find a way to get over the hump. And maybe, just maybe, by Blake Griffin going down, other people on that Clippers roster have to figure out how to make a clutch basket in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, in a road playoff game. And you know what? Maybe they would have been the third seed. Maybe they'll drop to the sixth seed. Who cares? The West is so brutal that it doesn't even matter. I'm not sure anybody has great home court advantage in that whole conference anyway. I mean, maybe Golden State has a good home court, San Antonio potentially, but you know, Houston's not a great home court advantage. Portland doesn't really have one. Dallas doesn't really have one. Maybe Memphis. But at the end of the day...
Oh, the Bryant is great.
Yeah, maybe Memphis. But at the end of the day, you still have to win 3 brutal series, right? So... Blake Griffin going down.
It's going to be the Wild Wild West. And we both said it. Anybody can win anywhere. So,
and I hope Blake Griffin comes back healthy, and I hope he comes back in shape and good to go. But you know what? Other people need to step up and give him credit. DeAndre Jordan has. Look, you're not going to invent an offensive game in 2 months. But he is playing bigger, and he is even bigger than he usually plays, and he's doing all he can.
No, you're totally right. I guess the only question that I would ask or ponder is there somebody out there that they could add? Austin Rivers has had a couple of good games. J.J. Redick, when he's healthy and in the starting lineup, he's been pretty productive. From Ray Allen to Larry Sanders to now JaVale McGee, is there anybody or even a Nate Robinson that they could put on that team to maybe help the Clippers for 10 minutes off the bench? Do you feel that there's any of those guys, or is it just they're just going to war with what they got?
I don't know. At this late stage, I mean, who do you think? At this late stage, you know, is somebody going to...
I think it's a done deal. I would try to add a Larry Sanders if I could, some size. Okafor is not playing this year, so I don't know.
I'm surprised Larry Sanders hasn't been picked up, right?
He's surprised.
A guy, especially at that position, right? You can just say defense, shot blocking, rebounding, just do your thing. We'll integrate you into the offense later, next season, if we like you. But just give us some defensive presence. So I'm surprised he hasn't been picked up. His off-the-court issues might be worse than we know. Maybe there's some rumors going around, because it doesn't make sense that a big man like that, who can block shots, who can defend the rim, that he's not being picked up.
No, totally agree. So, Ray, we'll see some great NBA games this week. We'll see some good matchups. This Golden State team, man, they're like 4 games in 5 days. They're playing again tonight. They've just been battling with every team, man. They put it on Toronto pretty bad, though, after that Cleveland loss. I think they play, was at Brooklyn tonight. So we'll see how they continue to go. But right now, Ray and Tay wanted to talk about the new series. We're starting it off with the creme de la creme. But we want to talk about the all-time starting fives in the NBA for a franchise. And we decided to go with the Los Angeles Lakers. Maybe one of the hardest to decide. But, Ray, let's start with the one spot that we know is the easy spot. Who would you put, and we both agree, who is your all-time Laker point guard?
That's the easiest one that you could ever have. With all due respect to Norm Nixon and Nick Van Exel and all these other young point guards that the Lakers have had. D. Fish has got 5 rings, as many as our guy.
Yeah.
But, that's our guy, Irvin Magic Johnson. I mean, that's a unanimous vote, hands down. There's no need to even debate that one.
No, you can't debate Magic. And to be 5-4 in the finals, that's just absurd. I think
to go to 9 finals in, 12, 13 years?
Yeah. Just incredible, Ray. What a career. And we saw it early on when Kareem missed the game and he basically wrapped up the series against the Sixers by, dropping, 42, 12, and 10 and playing center and doing everything. So Magic by far is the starting point guard. Now the shooting guard, the two guard, there could be some debate between Jerry West and Kobe Bryant. But to me, you got to go with Kobe Bean Bryant. You know, he's up there in so many categories. I mean, he's 6th all-time in blocked shots for the Lakers. This guy is the ultimate all-time Laker. Now, I know Jerry West is the emblem. Kobe's got, all these stats where he leads this and that. The most games as a Laker. Jerry West is third behind Kareem. But to me, I think Kobe, without a doubt, is – he completes that backcourt with Magic. Kobe would have to be the shooting guard for the Lakers all time.
You know what? It comes down to winning. And Kobe has 5. 3 with Shaq and 2 without him. So even though Jerry West went to, I believe it's 11 NBA Finals, 9 or 11, he only won 1. So I will say this, though. In Jerry West's defense, Jerry West has better stats than Kobe Bryant for points, rebounds, and assists. I mean, he scores almost 2 more points a game, 27 to 25. He has an extra half a rebound, and he has 2 more assists per game than Kobe Bryant. So as great as Kobe
he did play a little point guard, though. He played a little combo, because remember, him and Gail Goodrich, they would kind of switch off there.
Of course, but I'm just saying he's scoring more, he's assisting more, and he's rebounding more than Kobe Bryant, who we both believe is a top 10 NBA player of all time. So it's just unfortunate that Kobe plays the same position as you. You know what I mean? Just like Kobe will never be Michael Jordan. It's just unfortunate that they both play the two position, because Jerry West is the best two guard. Maybe the second or third best two guard in NBA history. He just happens to be sitting behind or maybe third or fourth, but he just happens to be sitting behind Kobe Bryant. But no disrespect to Jerry West, because that guy was phenomenal.
Jerry West is the man.
Kobe being Bryant.
Now, and we did say, to be fair, we said Jordan, Kobe, D. Wade, and Jerry West. Those are our four top four two guards, you know, just in terms of – because I think it's also both sides of the ball. Jerry West was not the greatest defender comparatively, I think, to Kobe, D. Wade, and Jordan are locked down, you know, when especially when D. Wade was healthy. So the small forward. Now, this one's interesting because – first run of it, when you look at it, without a doubt, you got to say, look, I mean, even in total rebounds, all-time Laker total rebounder, it's Elgin Baylor. You wouldn't even think about that, but he's the leading rebounder in Laker history with over 1,100 rebounds. So forget about just the scoring.
13.5 a game. I mean, that's like DeAndre Jordan numbers.
Ray, listen, let me tell you something. This guy... and Elgin never won. Remember, he got injured and I think missed the season.
The 72-73 season, yeah, or the 71-72 season, yeah.
Yeah, when they won it, and I think, I think they beat the Knicks that year, the Lakers. Imagine that without, you know, so Chamberlain and West. But, yeah, to me, I think, you know, Elgin Baylor is, he might be the top five, maybe four small forward of all time. You know what I mean? Up there with LeBron, Larry Bird, Dr. J, Elgin, Pippen. He's right in that five. But I think he's number one for the Lakers. James Worthy's a close second, though, because James Worthy's got the rings. He's a Tar Heel. He filled the lane on the break, baby. Oh, bring it home, James. James.
Oh, my goodness. Think about James Worthy, who's the 88 Finals MVP, has four rings with the Lakers, and
best
he's probably probably the one of the best, you know, winning players of all time. He can't even break that
starting
first
lineup.
Small forward starting lineup behind Elgin Baylor. You know who else you need to give credit to also on a statistical basis? Jamal Wilkes.
I didn't realize
how good his stats were. I mean, he averaged more points than James and more rebounds than James Worthy. So,
well, remember, him and Norm were deadly. When Magic first got there and Jamal was there before they got Magic, Jamal was the go-to guy. Jamal was the man.
You know who needs to be the starting five at all five positions? Is Jerry West, the GM who was able to assemble this ridiculous team that the Lakers had, you know, from getting Kareem in the late 70s to drafting Magic to getting Wilkes and Nixon and all these guys and trading Norm Nixon for Byron Scott and keeping that whole thing going and then eventually getting Shaq and Kobe 15 years later. I mean, just look at the talent that this team has had, especially since the late 70s. Unbelievable.
You're right about Jerry West. Listen, and you know, it's so funny. There's names that in other franchises they would be great. I mean, you know, we'll get to the power forward, but you got even a small forward, Meta World Peace, and you know, all these other guys that played there over the years. You know, Trevor Ariza was there for a minute. Remember our boy Eldon Campbell. So let me ask you, Andrew Bynum, Vlade Divac. So who we get to the big guys? So we got Kobe, we got Magic, Kobe, and Elgin Baylor. Who are you going to put at the power forward?
Oh, boy. So this is a dilemma where you got to – yes, I think very deeply. This is a philosophical debate, right? Because if you
– get out production's time. You got to be
– if you want to be strictly by the books, you can't put a center at power forward. Then you got to choose somebody – that's going to be very inferior, vastly inferior in terms of on-court production to those
centers.
What about
three different guys, I got to ask you? Because you automatically think of A.C. Green. But what about Eldon Campbell and Pau Gasol?
You got to think. Two rings. Probably had the best stats. He was 18 and 10. So, you know, you had Clyde Lovellette doing his thing, two-time All-Star, but Pau Gasol, two-time champion, and A.C. Green.
That high player efficiency rating for the play, you know, for the team.
Yeah, even though it was only, I guess we got to go back and check, but I think it was, what, 5 or 6 years, because he came over from Memphis, right, when we thought that he got stolen for his brother and Kwame Brown. Now, Kwame Brown turned out to be a bust, but his brother turns out to be a great player himself. So it wasn't that lopsided as we thought it was.
But one of the best passing forwards ever. And look at him
now.
By
virtue of the two rings, it's close between Powell and A.C. Green. I might give it to Powell.
Yeah, we got to give it to Powell. I think we do, because you know what? A.C. Green was sort of a little piece. He wasn't the top two or three guys for winning a championship. He was the fifth starter. You know what I mean? And that's a big difference. Pau Gasol, he Kobe doesn't win it without him.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? He helped teach Andrew Bynum up front what to do. Pau Gasol is definitely, now just going by position. So then that means at center, you've got Mikan, Shaquille, Wilt, Kareem. I mean, Andrew Bynum. Which out of those five guys, how do you pick one L.A. Lakers center?
I don't know. I don't think you do. So first thing you do is you cheat and you put a center and a power forward. So at least you get two of them. So remember how we said it's a philosophical issue?
We could do this two different ways, right? We could do like, okay, put Kareem at the four over Powell. And then at center, you put either Shaq or Will, right? So let's just do it. Let's just finish it this way. So Powell's the four, and then who would we put the five? Out of the centers, if you could only pick one, who's the greatest Laker center? It's got to be Jabbar, right?
I've got to say five rings trumps everything. You know, he's got six total. He won one with Milwaukee, and he won five. And even in the back-to-back years of 87-88, he was old. And he wasn't doing it, but he was still, I think, something like 14-10, you know, back end of his career. So to me, the championships trump everything. And
he's the all-time. Do you know he's the all-time shot block leader for the Lakers? Over 2,600. Shaquille only has over 1,200. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's all about Kareem.
Yeah,
so,
Kareem.
Those five rings really do it. Now, the question is, if you were to be able to put somebody at the power forward.
Okay, put Kareem at the four. Then who's your five?
Right.
Is it Wilt or
Shaq? Is it Wilt? Is it Mikan? We don't really remember Mikan. We were not old enough. So all of that stuff is on black and white, grainy photos. So maybe that kind of puts me out of the running because we don't really know him that well. But Wilt, we saw more of in terms of, you know, more recent footage. We didn't see him in his prime, obviously. He was in his prime in the 60s, really, 60s and
did you know
early 70s.
6,500 rebounds as a Laker compared to Shaq's 6,000?
I mean, this guy's unbelievable. He averaged 19 rebounds a game as a Laker. Just as a Laker, and that's at the end of his career.
All right, who are we going to pick, man? Because, you know, Shaq's still alive. Wilt's not alive, and, you know, rest in peace to Wilt, but we don't want Shaq chasing us down.
Wow. I don't know. I think they'd have to have, like, an arm wrestling match or something, or a free throw shooting contest. Nobody would win, right? We'd be in there forever.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I'd have to flip a coin on that.
If you gotta look at Shaq was the best player besides Jordan and Russell we've ever seen, but so was Wilt. Maybe I'd give
it
to Wilt. Because I think,
you'd give it to Wilt? Okay.
You know why I would? Because of the fact that his dominance was greater than Shaq's dominance, comparatively, what Wilt did. You know, he led the league in scoring, rebound. He led the league in assists 1 year. I mean, that's ridiculous. So that alone, Will Chamberlain is the most dominant. He needs his own stat category, like Jalen Rose always says. So we got to end it with Will Chamberlain, man. One of the greatest. You know what's so funny in history? How did Will Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor become underrated?
Because they
and Oscar Robinson
and Jerry West. I mean, they didn't win. They did not win. If they had won one or two more against the Celtics, maybe even beat our Knicks, think about how history would view them so much differently. It's crazy what winning does in sports. It's all about winning. You know, as much as those individual stats count, it's all about winning. Think about Barkley. Think about Ewing. Think about all these guys, Elgin Baylor, that Karl Malone never won a championship. If those guys won two or three.
Yeah, winning, it does lift up Duncan. People kiss Duncan. You know, they say Duncan's this and that because he won. Yeah,
and the player deserves it. You know, the player deserves it.
Definitely. You have to be great
for the playoffs.
You can't just be an average player and win. You know, like Derek Fisher is not going to be better than Chris Paul.
No, for sure.
All right, well, listen, great show, great starting five Lakers, Magic, Kobe, Elgin, Paul Gasol, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That five can go up against anybody's five. Maybe next week, maybe we'll tackle the Celtics and then get to the Bulls. So have a great
second
week.
Team. There, this is just one quick point. Their second team is probably, if we do this to the whole NBA, their second team is going to beat. There's 30 teams in the NBA, so take out the Lakers, 29 other teams. Their second team would be 26 or 27 of the other 29 teams.
Yeah, Ray, you're so right about that. You know, we might have to do this for every franchise and then put it up on our website. You know, so and for people to read and see and send us emails and disagree with. I think it's a great topic. So everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back Friday talking college hoops, NBA, and NFL free agency. And get ready to hit those bats, those pitchers, catchers, and the bats of baseball, baby. Have a great sports week.
It's all good. We'll see you on Friday.
Peace.